Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer Distributors. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported, nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's July 25th, 2017. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We've got some great guests joining us today at Heritage Radio Network. So this is the end of July Good Beer Month. It's our ninth year celebrating all things good beer in New York City. And we've got some great guests on the show. Let's go around the room and everybody introduce themselves, starting with the whole crew from Interborough Beer and Spirits.
My name is Jay Steiner. I'm in charge of sales over there.
Hey, I'm Laura Dirks. I'm one of the founders.
Hi, I'm Heather Rush from Pine Box Rock Shop and Precious Metal. Wow. Happy Good Beer Month.
And you know what's so cool is you've been doing all month. The guests that we have on the show, we're going around the corner to Pine Box Rock Shop.
Yeah, we have some awesome parties after the show.
And we're tasting their beers. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Really fun.
I'm Jesse, the brewer and founder at Interborough.
And I'm Gage Siegel from beermenus.com.
And our good buddy Robert from the Hot Blog is recording us live, and he's going to put up some great posts, videos, as he's been doing all month. This is a special month for me. You know, 9 years ago, a bunch of beer bar owners got together in a time when there were only four breweries in New York City, created the Good Beer Seal, which honors, you know, special, you know, beer bars, and created this idea of July Good Beer Month, which... You know, it's there's been a lot of other things. There's craft beer weeks and craft beer years and so many things, but really proud of the people in this room and everything that's happened. So we're going to talk about beer today. Maybe it's beer pride today. You know, Hillary might be posting on Instagram at beer_sessions. It's beer pride day. How about that? We need one of those. But, you know, talk about beer pride. Jesse, you know, you're out from under the thumb of Augie Carton, and you've been rocking at Interborough. Now, you guys have been open for 1 year, so congratulations.
Yeah, we're going to actually celebrate our first anniversary in September, on September 9th. So yeah, it's been an awesome year. We've made a bunch of really good beer, distilled a bunch of really good spirits, and we're super happy to be selling our products and inviting people to our space.
You know, we've had some great moments this year. You know, Jay was on a show last month with a bunch of beer reps. That was a really great show. And you and I sat on a panel for New York City Beer Week back in February. Or March.
That was a great event.
At the Well. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
the Well. Best event.
Yeah.
It was the best event. It won the award for best event. Don't be humble.
Yeah, that was a really great event. The Well has been an awesome neighbor to have. We're like three blocks away. They're on Mesa Roll and we're on Grand Street. Ian and Josh over there have been huge supporters of us from day one. And it's also because it's such a great local craft beer destination. A lot of people will visit the Well, and then Ian will text me like, "Hey, you at the brewery?" And I'll be like, "Yeah." And he's like, "All right, so and so is coming over." And then, you know, the Dave from Three Stars walks in, or Mike from Pipeworks walks in, and they're like, "Well, Ian said I should check this place out." And then we become friends, and then we brew beers or whatever the collaborative things that happen within the brewing world. And so, you know, having the Well as a neighbor has been a ton of fun.
And that's like going on in the city now. There's so many great places, breweries with tasting rooms and great beer bars. And Heather, you know, you guys are at Pine Box Rock Shop across, right around the corner from Roberta's, but you've opened a new place.
Yeah, we opened Precious Metal last year, and I had a baby a month later, so that was kind of nuts. I would not recommend it. But hey, it all worked out. I'm here today, so We got 18 lines of beer over there. We've been featuring a lot of sours, which has been really awesome. People definitely travel for those, and it's not in my wheelhouse, so it's been really cool to explore a lot of those great new sours.
Great. And Laura Dirks, you're the partner at Interboro Beer and Spirits. How's it going 1 year later?
It's going pretty good. We have we've had a lot happen in the last year, and it's been we've been just so lucky to have such a rock star team in our tasting room and in production. We've been very, very happy with how well received the beer has been and how well it's gone. It's really gone very, very smoothly for us, and we're pretty pleased and pleased with that.
You know, you guys as a team, Interboro, are there any surprises? You know, it's only 1 year. You know, you open the facility, you've got distribution. You know, tell us about some of the surprises or you know, unexpected, you know, things that happened in the first year of owning a brewery. Jesse doesn't want to talk. Is that Jay's job? Because he's sales.
I would just say cans, because I think that in the time between when we first sort of came up with our business plan and you know, first Laura and I and then Jay, Laura and I started talking about, you know, what we were going to do with the beer. It was all draft. Everything was like, well, how are we going to sell draft beer? How are we going to move draft product? And, you know, the cans have really allowed us to get our brand out and to spread the word about our brewery in a way that I don't think we ever really imagined. So it's been a lot of fun to work with our graphic designers and come up with cool labels and you know, use social media to present the cans, and people get excited about them, and then they come out and, you know, anything we can do to bring people into our brewery and bring people into our sort of crew and our community is what's the best thing for our business. And so the cans have really worked really well for that. And then the you know, at the same time, the whole sort of craft community in New York City has grown so dramatically in the past 3 or 4. I mean, you know, you mentioned 9 years ago when you guys started Good Beer, that there were 4 breweries in New York City, and now I think we're pushing almost 30. And the community is tight. It's really a strong community. I've been lately getting a chance to visit other cities, and I'm not as impressed, you know, as I am about the New York City crew in terms of how well we work together as breweries and as a team.
Heather,
it's,
you know,
so supportive. Oh, the craft beer community here is so supportive and so collaborative. It's so awesome. I feel like canned microbeer is having like a summer, having a moment. Like, I've seen just an explosion of canned New York micros, and the artwork is amazing.
Yeah, Heather, tell us what. Remember when you first opened Pine Box Rock Shop? Take us back. Why you guys made a craft beer focus?
2010. It's something that Jeff and I were just in love with. You know, the idea of it. We thought, you know, we'll do a brew bar. You know, but then I brewed beer and was like, oh wow, this is really hard. But it was a much smaller community at the time, and people were, I think, a lot less adventurous in trying different styles. Where now, you know, I always made a point of people coming in and they'd ask, you know, oh, I'll try that smoked beer, or I'll try that, you know, cask, or I'll try that sour. And I'd say, hey, have you had that before? Because people were really unfamiliar with it. Now people are like, oh, yeah, yeah, I totally am into smoked beers, or I totally am into, like, you know, quad Belgiums. You know, it's great. People right. are way more adventurous.
I remember when we first reached out to you, we said you've been awarded the Good Beer Seal.
Oh, we thought you were a scam.
Yeah.
I was like, who are these people? I've never heard of them. I'm not going to go and buy some advertising and this Jimmy guy. But it worked out for the best. Oh,
now
man.
Now you're good friends.
And right? I don't make fun of you guys, because you're like the vegan beer bar.
Yeah, yeah. All of our beers are vegan. Yeah. It's not that hard anymore to do. The fining agents.
Yeah, the use of biofine has gone way down. The acceptance of the hazy beers.
Yeah.
So what is that? How does that work in making a beer? So you have vegan beers.
Well, biofine is a fining agent, as Hillary said, that Heather
said.
Sorry.
You want to.
that is originally is enzymes that exist in fish bladders.
And Isinglass, right?
Yeah, yes. Isinglass. So that
sounds delicious.
Yeah, it is awesome. And I think that it must have been discovered by people who stored their liquids in fish bladders, hopefully pretty big ones, if it was beer.
I wonder if it was from the barrels, you know, that
had the fish in them.
Because isn't that's very similar to how wine and beer first began.
Right. In terms of that there were fish
stuff
in the barrels.
Stuff was carrying over the different yeasts.
Maybe, yeah. But now nobody needs it.
Maybe it was oyster shells. You never know.
Yeah, those are everywhere.
No, it's like fish bladders. Like it's a specific thing in fish bladders.
That makes it work. Let's talk about vegan versus non-vegan beer. So, like, when you have your hot dogs, the casing, you can have a meat hot dog. If you have a vegan hot dog,
it's from a vegan.
It's supposed to be in a vegan cow. We got a lot more. This is when we get to Google up. On that note, let's go to our hitmaster. One reason we invited Gage Siegel on from Beer Mania is that he brings his little laptop on. It looks like he's a DJ, but he's actually telling
much us less interesting than that.
The hit beers of the day in New York City.
So this has been really fun for us recently, looking at all these statistics and digging into, you know, what's popular, what are people searching for. We've upped our own traffic by 11% every single month for the last few months, updating beer pages. And what that has yielded for us ended up being, first of all, the most popular search beer. And this is actually nationwide. This is not just New York. Is not your father's mountain ale. Which is way less exciting than I had hoped for a top beer. I'm super sorry. But people want it. I mean, to the tune of like 50% more traffic than, or no, like 150% more traffic than any other beer. Beyond that, it was Zima and Zima Citrus, 2 and 3.
We served Zima.
Yeah?
Yeah, we got it at Presh. Yeah.
That's and bad question.
Did you sell it out?
Yeah, we sold every drop of that.
Everybody who I've talked to about it has said, oh, yeah, it sold out faster than, like, my hot craft cans.
Yep.
So how about we flip this? Number three,
here we're coming into the real deal craft beer, is the Lawson's Sip of Sunshine, which we just got into the New York market about 2 weeks ago at this point, and that's top in the list on our craft beers searched for and followed. So if you're a retailer and you haven't gotten it already, do it for sure.
And what about on your list of, and this is for Jay in sales because he's got cans to, one thing about cans is you can actually go to accounts and taste them. What's the highest trending Interborough beer on your
The highest list? Trending Interborough beer, I'd have to dig in a little bit here, you know? I don't have that one on the top of the list. I'd have to go digging. So we'll come back to that
if it's cans,
part.
I'm not going to give it to him anyways.
No, he's disappointed me. And what about for you, Jay? You're out there with, you know, let's talk about, you know, what's selling for you. Is cans changing the way you do business?
Well, we've been using the cans primarily out of the brewery to drive folks in. And then, you know, we tend to, like, gauge how much we want to produce, and then it'll sell out quickly. And so it's kind of come into our spot, have a pint of beer while you're there, and then pick up some cans and take them to go. But as far as what's going into market, which is primarily draft, it's the IPAs that are selling the quickest. I'd say the 6-7% IPAs that we're making are kind of, in my opinion, the sweet spot. And then the doubles that are a little bit stronger, that I didn't think the beer geeks file a little bit harder, sell really well. But then we're doing really well with the things that are, like, really easy drinking, like our Pilsner. And we did a Summertime Rolls, which is like a summer lager we did with Bunker.
You got the Bushburg Pils.
Today they just kegged up Kolsch called It's Your Thing that we were actually sipping right now.
So that's our first beer.
That's what we're trying, yeah. It's seasonally appropriate and clean and dry.
Jay, just say the name one more time.
It's called It's Your Thing.
It's a Kolsch.
Kolsch.
I liked it. That was a good one. I'll get a refill if I can. And Laura, for you, like on the business side, you know, partner in Interborough, how do you measure like what's trending and all that? You know, following your sales and you have beer and spirits. Or do you just look on beermenus.com?
I look on beer menus.
We're good friends. We talk a lot.
Actually, we scrape the data from there.
But she does. Yeah. They're the only ones because they're better. They're more technically advanced than we are. But there's no other brewery who gets even close. So it's just Laura.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of different data points we're looking at as far as from our production systems where we're tracking what's being made and what's being sold into wholesale, and then we have a whole retail, you know, side of things. You know, it's been fun to watch the different beers come and go and see what's popular and see what's not. We offer flights. So that's always fun to see what people are picking on their flights, you know, 4 4-ounce pours, and have like a nice array of things. We've gotten, sometimes we'll have like people come up and there'll be four like, you know, crazy double or imperial IPAs on the menu all at once, and they'll be like, I'll have those, I'll have that, you know, the IPA spread you've got up there. But other times we have, you know, we'll have people come up and have something like summertime rolls and pills, and then a double IPA and a single IPA, and have a nice spread of beers. And that's been fun to watch from a standpoint of, you know, looking at what people are choosing. And there definitely is that, you know, hot IPA market that we all know about of people coming in. But there are a lot of people out there who are interested in different kinds of beer and tasting a variety of different things. We have our R&D project that we've got a number of different things that have come out of that, small batches, just experimental things that are fun to watch people taste as well.
So, Jesse, are you working on a small system?
Yeah, we have a special a 20-gallon system that we use for experimentation. Primarily for this first year, it's been used for mixed fermentation stuff. We have a Brett Pale Ale that we've just bumped up to our full production scale. But on the R&D system, we just did a beer with our neighbor, who's a Belgian double fan with Brazilian, and it's with Brazilian wood, Amberana wood. So, you know, we're trying to play around and offer, the key being to offer variety for when people come in.
Great, man. Hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, Sheehan Family Companies, formerly L. Knife & Son, acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn. Union Beer has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Brooklyn and parts of Queens through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten Island, and Long Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education at all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the seven counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit unionbeerdist.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's July Good Beer Month. Our buddy Robert from the Hot Blogs here. He's recording videos of us, and we've got the whole Innerboro crew and Heather from Pine Box Rock Shop.
And Precious Metal.
I'd like to ask you about you. Last 2 weeks ago, I was at Pine Box Rock Shop, and you had that little buddy named Little Roger Rush.
Yeah, Roger Rush. Yeah, he's 15 months old
congratulations.
Now.
Congratulations. He's a very handsome boy. And
we had a really hard time finding a good bar back, so we figured we'd just make our own.
And were you actually talking about the personal issues? Were you bartending when you were pregnant?
I was, yeah, and that was very weird for some people. It takes them out of the moment. I stopped bartending nights because people were like, "Are you pregnant?" I was like, "No, why?" I just really love craft beer. It's fine. Would you like one?
Would that bother you? I mean, Gage, would you care if a bartender was pregnant or not?
I mean, they're the bartender. Are they slamming shots with me? I think that's,
yeah,
you know.
See, there's a whole, I mean, you know, tending bar, there's a little bit of a, there's a little bit of a carriage there, and
I know some good sober bartenders.
Yeah.
Some good sober craft beer bartenders.
Yeah.
Which is.
I know some very good sober bartenders.
Our good
friend. I feel like if you bartend long enough, you kind of end up there.
Yeah, our good friend Crimson works over at Mission Dolores, just had her last shift because she's expecting, and so they kind of
threw
a party for her, and it was nice to go in and. You know, she's going to do some of the managerial issues still, but she's moving on and going to be like...
Yeah, we had an event with her in like May or June and she wasn't drinking.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, you're disappointed because...
See,
know,
there's that. Yeah, people, even if you're not drinking with them, they want to believe that you may. And that's why I think it's weird for them. Yeah.
I never have that expectation of a bartender. Like, you should be drinking with me. I guess maybe I don't go out drinking alone enough. to have that, but
well,
I don't know.
Come on, that's down to each their own.
And then, Jay, you know, we also know you as a musician, and in years with bands, you know, was there any issue with women playing who were pregnant? I mean, did you ever have pregnant bandmates? Or?
No.
It gets in the way of the guitar.
Yeah.
No sure issues.
We covered that, but I wanted to just give a big shout out to Heather and Jeff Rush. Congratulations. I mean, it's a year and a half later, but yeah, your boy is very handsome, and hopefully we'll see him at
Fine Box. I already got him behind the bar some nights.
Well, this is a cool show. And talking about how do you buy beer? We're talking about, you know, trends and, you know, beer menus data and Interboro data. How do you buy
Jeff
beer for your bars?
Most of the beer for us. And, you know, he really tends to comb through, you know, blogs, reading, you know, what's out there, talking to reps. And he tries a lot of beer, too. We are definitely not the type, and you know, this is for good or for ill, where people go, oh, I've got a beer and it's going to sell really well and we don't like it, we won't buy it. Yeah. Even if it's a good price point.
Well, like lists that you source from, like, I'm actually disappointed in you guys at Beer Menus because I used to think,
I
oh, you
love Beer
but
Menus.
I love
I
you too.
Say.
But you used to be able to say, oh, I'm supposed to look at like Beer Menus top or
Rate
you know,
Beer.
So these different lists, and you're supposed to say, okay, these are the beers that are
Rate Beer. Rate Beer just got bought by AB.
Most in demand, guys. Listen, slow down.
I just had a baby.
Most in demand. But if you're looking at these lists now, and they're just kind of run of the mill, popular, like Zima's on a top list, I don't really want to talk about those other brands, but I expect to see, like, oh, the quirkiest, most interesting, like Interboro. What's the beer we have now? Because this would be on my top list.
Oh, you like this one?
I do.
This is called, so this was a collaboration we did with friends of mine out in LA called Mumford Brewing. It's Done Deal. And it's an IPA, surprise, surprise. And we did it with a hot blend of Denali, Equinox, and Falconer's Flight, which spell out DEF, D-E-F. Story on the beer is that...
Like this one. Have you had it yet?
Me and Todd Mumford, who was one of the two brothers that owns Mumford Brewing, used to work together in the music industry, and in 2003 or something like that, I helped him release a record by an artist from L.A. named Murs that he did production on, and the first song on the record was Done Deal. So that's sort of how we came up with the name.
I'm and like then, the 1, 2, 3 beer test. If I want to keep drinking it, it's good.
How do you guys name all that? That to me seems like such a difficult thing to do. It's like naming a band or a kid.
It's
just naming a beer.
I just listen to rap songs.
And you just name them all. We had a drink up at Pine Box called the Neighborhood Ho.
It's good. See, I have a lot of great ideas, but there's no puns allowed.
Yeah, no puns allowed at Interboro. We just did our first pun beer as a subtitle to a beer that our brewer and cellarman Nick came up with because we made a bridge with LIC. We made a beer with LIC Beer Project called The Bridge to honor the Kosciuszko being destroyed, and so I wanted to call the beer The Bridge Is Over, but we decided to call it The Bridge, but then the subtitle was Down With The Cause, K-O-Z. So
cute. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Which is coming down today, actually.
Is today the day for the main span?
The main span's being lowered like over like 17 hours or something.
It's not going to be imploded. It's just going
to
be
no.
Lowered.
So no, but here's the story. So they're gonna bring the main span down with cranes and drop it to a barge and then sail it away. But then sometime in August, the approaches are going to be exploded.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Yeah,
and that,
too.
So the guy came in. One of the guys who's working on the bridge came in the day we released those cans and bought a case of it. And he was like, "Oh, I've got to get a case of that because I'm working on the bridge." And I was the one selling him the beer, so I immediately started plying him for answers about when it was going to get destroyed and taken down. And he told me it was going to be mid-August that they were going to explode the approaches, but he wouldn't give me a definite date.
Laura, has there been a beer name that you've had to nix?
You know, I don't get much vote in the. I don't know. It's actually,
she just gives me funny looks every once in a while. Like
I have semi-veto power. Semi-veto power. I'm like, yeah, no.
I have a beer name that I submitted to the SLA called Ill Street Juice in reference to the Kool G Rap song Ill Street Blues, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. And Ill Street Juice, I think, is a funny name. But I can understand, if you don't know the song, how Ill Street Juice might just sound like bad beer.
Well,
Did you get it denied?
Yeah.
No, it didn't get denied.
Have you ever had a beer name or label that's been denied by the feds?
At Interboro, we haven't had it. Have we had anything denied yet?
No.
Let's try.
We do have some crazy things that they kick. We have some crazy things that they do kick back. You know, like, but it's mostly on the spirit side. They're definitely more stricter on the gin and tonic labels. Were an interesting.
Oh yeah, label. The gin and tonic in a can label took. We started in November, and I think we finally got approval in like March or April or something like that. It just was because it hasn't been done very often, and they're all specialists in quotes. And
so for a while, there was just one guy at the SLA who did beer labels.
Oh yeah,
Battle.
And so now they have a lot of people.
His name was Battle?
Yeah, his name was Battle. That's
you guys should go easy on him if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's his given name.
But he's not there. I think what I was told recently, and I think I read it in an industry newsletter, is the Battle now. He quit the TTB, and now he consults for the TTB. So he probably got like a doubled his pay, and then they hired like six other people to do his job.
I think they had to hire six people to do his job. They found out that he was doing a crazy job. But the only time
I did ever get anything rejected that I submitted was when I was at Carton, and we had Carton of Milk. And the New Jersey ABC called and said, are you going to put this in a package in a grocery store? And I was like, no, it's going to be draft only. And they were like, all right, great, because otherwise we'd be worried about Carton of Milk and confusion with...
Yeah.
And that was a milk stout, right? So it was, you know, that was Augie's, you know, Carton of Milk, milk stout. But they passed. As soon as I told them it was going to be draft only, they rubber stamped it, so...
Can I ask a question about the canned spirits?
Yeah, sure.
The only other canned spirits that I've seen... Yeah, Jimmy, you scammer.
This is a beer show.
Well, no, I mean, you know...
Heather paid $100 to be on this
radio. Thank you. Quiet, you.
Ask whatever you want.
The only other canned spirits I've seen are Jim Beam. Do you guys... Are there... Like, tell me about the market. Like, I don't really know anything about it. As somebody who sells alcohol, sure. I'm very curious.
There were a few of them out there. There's a few more now. Azima's come back. It's been interesting. The reintroduction of Azima's brought a lot of hard seltzer into the market. But canned spirits and like distilled spirits in a can are like kind of a funny thing because they can only be sold in places with like full licenses.
Like Azima, they
right?
feel kind of like a novelty item, like something that you would sell for like a season or. But that's not your guys' plan.
Yeah, no. Well, we want to have more available because
our plan. I mean, the way we're looking. I mean, the way I think that our sort of shared view on the canned spirits is that it's a great opportunity to sort of push the spirits in at a very accessible level.
Totally.
Because the markets for distribution on beer and spirits are traditionally so different.
Yeah.
Gage from Beer Menus, you got any updates on the? The hit master list.
So we've got the full New York stats now. So I know the big question with Interboro in the room is what's their most popular beer, and that's going to be their Run the Jewels collab Stay Gold IPA, which I'm sure Jesse can talk more about, but it is coming out again this week, a double dry hopped version.
Tomorrow. No, today's Tuesday. Thursday.
Nobody.
Please. We don't need a line tomorrow.
Right. Don't need it early. And so added to the list, we've got a couple of beers from Grimm, both Awuga Forcefield, Sumi Cacao, and Living Daylights are in the top 10. Speaking of hard seltzer, White Claw hard seltzer. I don't know. Is that an ABI product?
Boom.
That's a big one, but that's up there.
I can't remember who makes that one. I've looked at it before.
Top 10, Wolfer Dry Rosé Cider.
That is delicious,
also,
I will say.
I saw someone have that like the other day. Yeah, they look like they're having the best time.
So good.
And as well, two beers from Montauk, the Summer Ale and the Watermelon Session IPA.
Okay, this is what we're going to talk about next, because there's one thing about these listings. It's funny. It seems like something that went from, I thought all the craft beer guys would be geeking out on like the really good stuff. But it seems like a lot of the listings now, they're more mainstream.
Well,
and so, I wonder what that is. Are the other companies jumping on board and trying to get on your listings?
Well, so these are totally objective. These lists, what I'm talking to you about today is search data. This is what beer drinkers in the five boroughs want. This is what they're going to Google for. This is what they're coming to us for. So, I mean, if I was picking the list, this would be much different. It would have some more Interboro on it. It would have some LIC. But it's really about what do people want? What are they looking for? And because we're capturing casual drinkers, You know, the biggest swath of beer drinkers are people who are just out on Google because they want to just find that one thing, that Not Your Father's, that Zima, the whatever the case may be. As much as it's not as geeky, it's what people search.
What is Not Your Father's Mountain Ale?
And what is your father's Mountain Ale? To follow up.
I don't know. My dad's not in the mountains, but I think it's a ginger. Ginger? No, because that's not your father's ginger beer.
Sounds like boozy Mountain Dew.
That's my root beer.
I have to cut this one because I don't want to talk about that. Well, we're taking a short break. We'll back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio and talk more about craft beer on Heritage Radio Network. All right.
Hi, I'm Joe Campanelli, host of In the Drink on Heritage Radio Network. In the Drink is the show that brings you the most interesting personalities and delicious drinks of the beverage industry. Tune in on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. to hear about who are some of the best importers of wine and beer and what are the decisions that they have to make that goes into the wines and beers that they're bringing in. You'll hear from a bunch of great winemakers and sommeliers, all those topics on In the Drink. Support my show and all of Heritage Radio Network's programming. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Check it out. Become a member. Unlike public radio, we won't talk about it for the entire show, but I'm a member, and there's a lot of good members that we know. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. That was Joe Campanella from In the Drink, a great restaurant guy, wine guy. There's so many talented hosts on this network. Keep tuned. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. So we've been going off track. We've been talking about, it's July, Good Beer Month. We've got Innerborough and Pinebox Rock Shop and Beer Manners. We're talking about all the trending things on these sites, but we're going back to craft beer only. I don't really want to talk about beverages that you can get in the supermarket. In fact, I don't even buy food in the supermarket, but that's radical. But I buy Bob's Red Mill, Bob's Red Mill steel cut oats all the time. But Heather, you know, as a you have two beer bars now. You have Pinebox Rock Shop and the new one,
18 lines,
and
Precious
Metal.
Yeah.
So you know, let's pretend Jay, who is like your head of sales for Innerborough. How do you sell your beer to a beer bar owner like Heather, who only cares about really good products?
You are the conduit for this one, Jimmy. No, I mean, it's about, you know, going in and identifying what they're doing there and considering what their customer base is and then saying, here's an excellent product that would potentially be a good fit for you, rather than like, oh, everybody loves it and I'm supposed to come in here and tell you everybody loves it and we sell X amount of volume because it's popular and it's at the stadium.
I mean, those are good things to know, but I mean, if the beer is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we sell quality first, and then we're trying to be fair with the way we price our products, considering how expensive it is to produce this stuff. And then, you know, we don't have an infinite amount of liquid, so we'd like to actually have it in the right accounts. And so, it's good for them because you don't find it up and down every block because we've sprayed it all over town, and it's good for us because it's the right setting.
It does seem to be the case now that with so many of the New York City, the breweries that have their own tasting rooms, you really are more selective about who gets to get your product.
I love that, actually. Talking to individual reps, sort of what we were talking about, they come in, they introduce themselves, you know, you make a relationship so that when something really unique or special comes out, oftentimes Pinebox and now Precious Metal will get a keg of it, and that is wonderful because that brings people out. It's great for you. It's great for us, and I don't see that happening with, you know, unfortunately, the larger breweries or, you know, bars that just care about volume. They're not going to get those really specialty craft beer items. And just really quick, too, you know, just how we were talking about how collaborative and what a community the craft beer market is here in New York is that a lot of reps will say, oh, you know, I don't necessarily carry this product, but have you tried this? It's fantastic. Like, they're going out there for their friends and other breweries that they've worked for. And I think that's amazing.
Let's also, there's a couple of terms that have come up lately. Last week I got to sit with Rob Todd from Allagash, who's the chair of the Brewers Association. His show will air next week on Tuesday, August 1st, a great talk. We talked about terms like the importance of local breweries and the importance of independent, whether it's independent breweries or businesses. Does anybody want to talk about those terms?
I'd say that there are a lot of things that we can do differently, and that's, for me, the benefit of having a brewery around the corner, because we can talk about, well, what works well for you as a business owner and a bar owner? Like, what are people coming in and asking for? And then we can feed that back pretty quickly to be like, what are we going to brew next? And we do a lot of that. We talk a lot, about what should we be making and what should we have as a product offering so that we have a little bit of everything that we can produce in quality and be very much in touch with our customers who are then pouring great product for their folks.
Heather, does anything like the new independent craft beer label, will that mean anything to you as a bar owner?
Definitely. I mean, a precious half of our lines are dedicated to local stuff, which we were talking about, we couldn't have done that when we opened Pine Box. It just wasn't possible. You know, and now with it's almost like we are going back to where we have like micro economies. You know, people don't just come in and ask us, you know, do you have any New York beers? They go, do you have any New York City beers? Do you have any Bushwick beers? And what's really great is we get a lot of tourists. I'm like, oh, this is made like five blocks that way. And people love that. And I don't see that, you know, I came from Seattle and we had a great craft beer community there too. But this is totally different. This is much smaller.
Oh, wait, Heather. Much more. So what is your Bushwick beer tour? If I had to go to bars and breweries.
Oh, my God.
That's what I want. I want Bushwick the Heather Bushwick beer tour. Yeah.
Well, can I include Bridge and Tunnel, because I love them and they're just up in Maspeth. And then I would...
Robert from Hot Blog says, buddy?
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, Bridge and Tunnel's amazing. And obviously, KCBC. Those guys are sweethearts. They have a beautiful tap room. I also would include Finback, even though it's in Cordell, because I really like their tap room, too. Yeah. But then asked me, where would you go? That's as far as I'd get. I get to KCBC and then go to Precious.
If you include Glendale and Maspeth, you've got to have East Williamsburg, which, you know, you ask an old school New Yorker, that's definitely Bushwick.
Yeah, totally.
And then, of course, here we are.
Yeah.
With Interboro. Yeah.
I love your guys' that neighborhood. I think it's great. I love the anchor.
But, Jesse, I was talking about local breweries and independent craft beer label, you got quiet. Usually not quiet, because you're a deep thinker. I know that.
I think that a lot of this comes down to it's small business people, and they're opening small businesses, and we're trying to do our best to serve our communities as best we can with high quality products. And I think that it's very I'm speechless.
For what you're doing. So.
Yeah, you know, I understand. And what we're trying to do is grow a brand based on, you know, our passion for what we're doing. And so bringing people in is our number one. But then, like, you know, expanding our network within the community is number two, because we bring consumers in who are looking for a certain experience, but then those same consumers, you know, they're not all. Most beer drinkers these days are looking for variety first. Well, quality, I think, first, right? And then after that would be variety. They're looking to have a different experience in each glass. A lot of them are. I think, as Laura pointed out earlier, we do get a lot of people who aren't quote unquote beer geeks who are looking for. They're excited about what's happening in brewing in America, and they're excited about you know, the idea that they can visit a brewery. But in the long run, you put four different IPAs in front of them, and they're not really going to be able to decipher the differences and the nuances between each one. Whereas if they go to a rotator bar, I mean, you know, of somebody who's just going to be featuring a bunch of different breweries and a bunch of different styles, right? Then they can taste, if they have four beers there, then it's like very, like, you know, you pointed out earlier, like smoked beer versus sour beer and then suddenly your palate is actually being tantalized by just flavors that are all over the spectrum.
Jesse, what's the next beer we're drinking?
Oh, this is Full Time. This is an IPA that in a series we make called Halftime, Full Time, and Overtime. It's all three of them.
Yes. More please, Jay.
All three of them feature Citra.
Jay, you're my favorite beer rap ever.
They all three feature Citra and Galaxy, and one's a session, one's a full strength, and one's an Imperial IPA. And this is the third time we've brewed it, and the second time we've canned it. It seems to be, you know, we've been on a sort of an IPA mission for the past 12 months. I think most brewers are on an IPA mission, and we've been really trying to, you know, hone in on which ones people like and which because. We don't have an Interboro IPA. We don't have a beer that we make that's called Interboro. But what we I think we will hopefully end up at it is at a point where we have four Interborough IPAs or three.
You're also 1 year in, like you're still learning your system and all these things, right?
Yeah, we've learned the system. I think we've gotten. I think that now it's more about learning what our place is in the market and what we can, you know, that Jay mentioned that the 6% IPA has been working out really well for us. We want to sell a lot of beer. I mean, that's, you know, flat out, that's the bottom line. And we want to, but we also, like, there's no compromise on quality or what we're putting in it at any point. And so trying to find the ones that we know we can make consistently and that people like consistently, because at some point the brewing side becomes about scale and being able to make larger quantities of the same beverage and having it still be able to sell. And so we're trying to say, all right, well, which one's full time is one that people seem to like. Mad Fat Fluid is one that people like. Stay Gold is one that people like. And so it's like we're using our tasting room, we're using our draft accounts. It's all market research at this point to some degree. And then we're just also having fun and making stuff that we really like.
You guys are getting your own data. Beer Manager's getting data, but Heather. You know, I don't want to say the pregnant mom data, but you know, when you couldn't drink and you're craving a beer, or these days now, what
IPA
do you drink? What,
I really was craving
still want
an IPA
too.
Yeah, I'm an IPA drinker. That's definitely that. I know that that's a little boring now, but I love them.
Oh,
I think
not
that the widest breadth of flavor that you can pull from a beer recipe, and I know this is a contentious opinion, the Belgian people definitely disagree with me, is from IPAs.
You know, people are constantly asking me, well, what's going to come after IPA? And I still love IPA.
Yeah,
you know, and it's been 5 years since we opened Carton.
Gage,
and
can
that
you pull up the top IPAs?
You really can't put me on the spot like that. Last time I was on the show, you know, you asked me a similar question. What's hot? What's the style? Where's it going? And the answer was IPA with no signs of stopping. And that is the same today, all these months later. And craft beer changes quickly. I mean, as you mentioned, where we were, you know, when you started the Good Beer Seal, four breweries in New York. But we've got a bunch of IPA breweries in New York, breweries who that's their sole focus, Interborough included, or not their sole focus, but primary. One of them, one of the big ones. And IPA shows no signs of stomping. And I agree that there is such a breadth of flavor you get from IPA, hop varietals.
So back to the beer bar owner. Who is my real go-to now? We don't need technology, Heather. What's the beer that you're craving? An IPA that's at one of your bars you've had recently that you'd say, Jimmy, I really want you to try.
You know what? I'm gonna totally backtrack. I just want to say that rosé cider, which was so good. I just was not expecting that to be delicious, and I usually am not a cider drinker, and just totally fell in love with it.
It's the summer of rosé.
Yeah. So yeah, it is the summer of rosé. I would say sours are super hot now. And people are much more willing to try real funky sours. Carton had a couple real funky sours that people were, I know you laugh, people were willing to go to. And I was impressed, you know. Like, I think that, you know, just for an average consumer speaks to a willingness to try something different that just was not there a few years ago.
Yeah. Hey, Jay, I want to bring you in because you've been on the show a lot. And, you know, going way back to American, you know, distributor, you've dealt with a lot of brands and seen them grow, and I respect your opinion.
Thank you.
But, you know, you weigh in on this.
All right. I think part of what's going to be going down, I think the growth of IPA is going to continue, and the execution of really good ones is going to be celebrated. But I think beyond that, it's very delicious, simplistic beers, things that are not over the top. It's almost like we've been talking a lot about Pilsner and lagers, and I think those are really consumable, and you can sit down and put five of them in a row, and you can easily have the right one stand out and everybody nod and be like, that is killer beer, and at the other end of the spectrum, that is awful, and yet they're in the same family, and they're produced on whatever scale with whatever quality ingredients going to them. But I mean, I think the companies that are doing these things that are low alcohol content, clean finishing, high utility beers that are food friendly and like that you could like have in any situation that aren't going to break the bank as far as the consumer's looking at buying it by the pint. I think that, in my opinion, is where it's at. I mean, I want to see a lot of things. I've always been hellbent on like having other styles celebrated than what's going on right now. I love English Milds, but nobody cares. I like ESB, but nobody's drinking them. I do.
Schwartz beer.
Schwartz beer. It's one of my favorites of all time. And it's kind of like these Germanic beers that are not like over the top in bitterness, but on there's a lot of character going on. There's a lot of flavor, yet they're very smooth finishing. And I think there's some companies out there that are starting to dial that in. And I think the consumers, you know, they want to taste extreme things, but I feel like, and I shouldn't say extreme, some of the beers a decade ago were presented to be as extreme as they possibly could be. And I think the world was, I always like to say, they were duped into embracing offensive flavors. And
I'm not a smoked beer fan.
No, I love smoked beer. But if it's not over the top, if it's balanced, I mean, it's almost like if it's like extreme, it was just extreme to be extreme. And I feel like those things can be measured like ingredients going into a dish of food.
Like those rogue. What is it? The rogue donut? Voodoo donut?
Voodoo donut.
Yeah.
That's the one in that pink bottle.
Yeah.
That was fun packaging, and the beer was.
Jay, those musings are beautiful, man. I love hearing you talk. And Laura, you have something to say, and I'm sorry if I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, I think that, you know, one of the things.
See, how about that last beer?
it's all so good. One of the things that I love about all the beers that we're making, because Jesse's so awesome at what he does, is that they are all balanced and they're all approachable. They're not one of them is like hit you over the head, test out your testosterone, crazy ass hot bombs that are hard to drink, you know? And I think that that's one of the things that we're, you know, pushing forward with and have really established over this first year of us being on Innerborough is really trying to present beautifully balanced beers that, you know, you can have with your dinner versus you can have two of, you know, and you want two of. It's not, well, that was really nice, and, yeah, I'll drink that again next year when they make it. I'll, you know, have
Laura, what? This is a geeky question. What's the beer that's at home in your fridge? Hate that question, but I got to ask.
On your tap.
No, on my tap. I had the Bushburg Pilsner on my tap at home. We put in a kegerator in my house. My husband was sure that we needed it. He was very sure.
Yeah. He was right. Yeah.
He was right. So,
there's a great shift. I mean, I think we've seen it sort of inside the industry towards Pilsner, lager, lighter, easier drinking, more utility beers, as Jay was mentioning. And that's spreading. There's desire. I mean, Suarez family in Livingston, tell me I'm wrong, upstate New York, is being lauded constantly as one of the best breweries in the country.
Not all a louder over ton, but lauded.
Exactly.
With praise, yes.
And he's focusing on lagers and making phenomenal lagers.
And simple pales and pale mixed fermentation beers. I was on vacation last week with my family and made sure that my first stop was Suarez to pick up a case of his qualified pills because that's what I drank by the excuse me, that's what I was drinking in the woods all last week, along with our beers. But
it's the answer to what's in Jesse's fridge. It's qualified.
That's definitely true about Pilsners. We are definitely selling more. And people are willing. Before, I think it was people would just ask, like, oh, a Pilsner is a Pilsner is a Pilsner. And maybe once in a while you get people in being like, oh, I want that Czech style, like something a little more traditional. But now people are much more willing, I think, to try different styles.
Engage. Going back to beermenus.com, you know, do you know what's in all of our fridges? Because you have all this data.
Well, Jimmy, because you use us and Innerborough uses us and Pine Box and Precious Metal use Beer Menus. Yes, I know what's in all of your fridges. And not enough of you, well, they have their own beer, so I'll drink their Pilsner. But Metric Pilsner, that's the one for me, the what's in your fridge question. Uh-huh, exactly.
Heather, I want to give a big shout-out. So you guys reached out to us last month and said, hey, for July.
We wanted to do some beer events. We were, you know, like I said, we opened a new bar and had a baby, and I feel like I just stepped away from the bar, and Good Beer Month really just sort of snuck up on me. I looked at the calendar, I didn't see it, and I was like, let's do it. I reached out to you, and you actually suggested Innerborough, and I'm so glad you did, because it's great. Yeah.
Well, cheers, and watch out, New York City. Heather Rush is back with little Roger Rush, and before you know it, he'll be the 4-year-old bar back that every girl will have a crush on.
Totally.
You got him. Did a great job. Everybody, let's one more time go around the room. Everyone say their name and affiliation. It's been a great show. Thanks, everybody. July, Good Beer Month. Robert from At The Hop Blog, you've been doing special videos all month. Thank you, man. Cheers.
This is Jay Steinhauer from Innerborough Brewing.
Laura Darks from Innerborough.
Heather Rush from Pine Box and Precious Metal.
Jesse Ferguson from Innerborough.
Gage Siegel from beermenus.com.
Wow, and I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks again to everyone, including our producer, Justin Kennedy, assistant producer, Hillary Fasten, and our engineer extraordinaire, David Tadisher. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.